Hack the Entrepreneur is part of Rainmaker FM, the digital business podcast network. Find more great shows and education at rainmaker.fm. Today's episode of Hack the Entrepreneur is brought to you by Earth Class Mail. Earth Class Mail moves your snail mail to the cloud, giving you instant access 24/7, and it integrates with the tools and services you use every day. You also get a real professional address to share publicly with customers, business partners, and investors. Now, I've checked out Earth Class Mail, and I think it's a brilliant solution that's perfect for businesses and independent entrepreneurs of all types. Visit earthclassmail.com/hack, and you'll get your first month of service free when you sign up. That's earthclassmail.com/hack.
Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. So very cool of you to join me again today. I am your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today is the author of the New York Times bestsellers, Better Than Before, The Happiness Project, and Happier at Home, as well as a podcaster, happiness expert, blogger, and a brilliant entrepreneur. My guest attended Yale Law School, got a job at a law firm, and then decided she wanted to go out on her own and become a writer. She has now become one of the most thought-provoking and influential writers on habits and happiness. Psychiatrists now advise their patients to read her books, and college professors assign them to students. She is also the co-host of her podcast, where she discusses good habits and happiness with her sister Elizabeth. Now, let's hack Gretchen Rubin. I want to take a moment to thank today's sponsor, ProJob Network. If you're a small business owner, you can do 1,000 things to find a great new hire. Or you can do one, post with the ProJob Network. Just one click, post your ad to over 40 different job sites. It would probably take you forever to do that, and even then, you wouldn't get the preferred placement that you'll get from the ProJob Network. In about a day, you'll have a list of qualified local candidates to choose from, because ProJob Network will place your job in front of qualified candidates who've asked to hear about your specific opportunities. How great is that? You'll save time, you'll save money, and you'll find good people. Go ahead, try ProJob Network free for 1 week by visiting tryprojob.com/hack. That's tryprojob.com/hack. Welcome back to another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. Today we have a very, very, very special guest. Gretchen, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. I'm very happy to be talking to you today.
Oh, this I've been waiting for this one for a while, so I'm looking forward to this. Let's jump into it.
Excellent.
Gretchen, as an entrepreneur, could you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
You know, if I had to really pick one sort of aspect of my work style or whatever, is I'm really good at consistent work. You know, there's and Better Than Before, I talk about marathoners and sprinters and how some people really like to work against the deadline and they like sort of the crunch of coming, you know, having time pressure. And I'm somebody who can really, I can have a book that's due in 2 years and I can just work consistently every day. Or I can have a blog where, you know, when I started my blog, no one read it, but I posted 6 days a week. I could just consistently stick to whatever plan. And, you know, in the long run, even if you don't get very much done in any one day, which often happens, I think just by being consistently productive, I've really been able to get a lot of things done.
Do you honestly have days where nothing gets done?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I do. I mean, and I think you just have to accept that that's part of it. Gertrude Stein has some wonderful quotation where she says something like, the thing about being a genius is you have to spend so much time doing absolutely nothing. And so I think sometimes, and Virginia Woolf said something like, to do nothing is my most creative way. And so I think that thinking that a day is a failure if something doesn't get done, I mean, I feel like the attempt to get something done is what the success is. And sometimes not that much gets done, but I'm still at my desk. I'm still sitting in front, you know, addressing my work. And I think that counts.
Yeah, exactly. I love it. And have you always sort of had the ability to stay consistent and not have to force yourself to work with deadlines?
Yeah.
Or is this something that you've had to sort of push yourself to learn to do?
Well, that's interesting. I have always been like that. It's always come very naturally to me. And again, that was one of the things when I was studying habits in Better Than Before. This was something that I had always noticed was true about me, but I'd never really thought about, like, well, how are other people different from me? Because if you look around the world, it's very clear that a lot of people don't have that. It doesn't come naturally to them. And that was one of the things I was really interested in looking at, is how are people alike and different when it comes to forming a habit of something like consistent work. What I found is that I'm part of a little freaky fringe group called the Upholders. And for us, it's pretty easy, but most people are not like us. And that was a huge revelation to me, because I kept thinking, like, oh my gosh, why are people just, you know, if it's important to them, why don't they just make up their mind to do it, put it on the schedule, you know, set aside some time in your calendar, just do it. And I was so puzzled why people seem to struggle with this so much. And so that was one of the things I really tried to explore in Better Than Before, was to understand, like, I am unusual in my capacity to do that. It's not, I mean, there's a lot of people like that, but it's not that big a group. And there's disadvantages to being that, an upholder. That's what I call that category, the upholders. There's disadvantages to it too, but there's definitely advantages. And one of the advantages is that you can do consistent work without any supervision or deadlines, if that's what you want to do.
Yeah. I love that. Realizing that you're not like everybody else.
Yes.
It's a hard realization to
make. It is. It is, because I think we just naturally assume that other people are like us, because you think it just colors and shapes the whole way you see the world.
I know.
I constantly am trying to pull myself back from that assumption and to see how I have a very particular point of view and understand how people could see something very differently from me.
Excellent. And speaking of pulling yourself back, I want to go back sort of to the beginning of this journey for you, because you went to Yale Law School, you became a lawyer, and then I believe at some point you decided you wanted to become a writer.
Yes.
So I would love to know, because there is this time sort of in every, like, entrepreneur or dreamers or authorpreneur, whatever you want to call yourself at this point, it's life though, when they realize that they have this calling to make this difference, or they find that they just simply don't. Like, they can't work for someone else and they don't want to play that sort of game anymore. So could you tell me sort of how this happened and how you realized that this was even something that you could do?
Well, it's interesting, because when I look back on my whole life, I did everything a person would do to prepare herself to be a writer. So I was doing all the right things, but I didn't see a place for myself in the writing world. I didn't see what I would do. And it kind of is default, the way many people do. I went to law school because, like, oh, I'm good at research and writing, and it's a great education, and I can always change my mind later. It'll keep my options open, blah, 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 blah. So then I go, and I did very well and had an amazing experience as a lawyer. But when I was clerking for Sandra Day, I clerked for Sandra Day O'Connor, which was an extraordinary opportunity. It was fantastic. But when I was there, I was starting to work on a big research project. And that was not that unusual for me. My whole life, I will sort of get really obsessed with a subject and do tons of research for no real reason other than I'm just really interested in something. And so that was happening to me, but this was big. I mean, I was staying late at work. I was working on the weekends. I was generating this gigantic trove of notes. And it slowly started to dawn on me, I really was doing what a person would do to prepare to write a book. And writing a book was something that people did as a job. It didn't have to be something that you did on the weekends. This was something that was actually someone's career. And my sister was a professional writer. So she's a TV writer. So I had somebody very close to me who was a professional writer. And it just got to the point where I was like, if I'm ever going to switch, I got to switch now. My husband and I were moving from Washington, D.C. to New York. He was switching out of law. I had this idea for the book I wanted to write, and I thought, it's never going to get easier than this. If I take one more law job, I might never give it a shot. And at this point, I would rather fail as a writer than succeed as a lawyer. So I should try to see if I can make it work. And I went to the bookstore and got a book that was called something like How to Write and Sell Your Nonfiction Book Proposal, and just followed the directions. I mean, I didn't know what else to do. Turned out the book was accurate, and I did, in fact, use it to write and sell my nonfiction book proposal. And so that's how I did it. But I think I was lucky, because I think sometimes people know what they don't want, but they don't know what they do want. So they know they want to leave something, but they don't know where they want to end up. And that is a whole huge process. I mean, you spoke a few minutes ago about someone having a calling. If you have a calling, in a way, it can be very uncomfortable because there's sort of that feeling of compulsion, which I definitely experience. But it also makes things very clear because you're like, this is what I want to be doing with myself. Sometimes people don't know what they want to do. And I think that then it's, you know, it's like that long process of self-examination, which is often grueling.
Yeah. Or can it...
And anxiety provoking. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm wondering, though, can it also be like, I don't know if you want to call it like limiting beliefs or whatever, but I mean, most people, if you could give them complete free will and like to know that they wouldn't be mocked, they wouldn't be laughed at, and they could literally just kind of become anything, I think that maybe people would know more what they want to do. But like you, from lawyer to like, I want to be an author. It's so many people would think that, well, I couldn't be an author. You know what I mean? Like I've chosen my path. This is what I'm going to do. And I think that's the hard part, right? Is that we think that. And I would like, you bought a book and you follow the instructions, which you're supposed to do with most books, but most people don't. And it worked.
Well, I think part of it's also like people just don't know enough. Like they don't know about... It's like, I think one of the reasons law is appealing is like we have an idea of what that looks like. It might not be accurate, but we kind of have an idea in our mind. But there's a lot of jobs, and there's more and more jobs like this all the time where like you don't even know that job exists. It's like, I mean, I went to a conference and it was all people who were the advisors to sororities and fraternities. So these were like the adults that sororities and fraternities hired to kind of work with the fraternity, you know, to like be the adult around in a sorority house on some major account. I'm like, I had no idea that was a job. I mean, for the right person, that's a great job. I had no idea that was a job. You know, so I feel like sometimes it's you have to do a lot of research or like have a lot of imagination and like put your mind out there to even know that there's something that would be the kind of thing for you, because it's hard to know what the possibilities are.
That's true.
I think sometimes. And all the
kind of conferences do you go to?
Oh, I go to all different kinds of conferences. And that's what I love too, is all of a sudden I'll parachute into this incredibly intense, vital subculture that I have no idea about, you know, that I didn't know existed. And yet here it is. It's a whole world of people who all know each other and have thriving businesses and tons of friends all over the country. And, you know, I'm like, it's cool. But, and so I think there are possibilities, but it can seem overwhelming sometimes. And especially if you're sort of like, well, I like this and I like that, but I don't know how it ends up being a career. Like, I like public speaking and I like writing, but like, what am I going to speak about and to whom and on what? And you know what I mean? It's a long process for some people to figure out how they want to proceed. And then for some people, you know, they have some idea that they feel like, oh my gosh, this is it. Like, I can't run fast enough to pursue this because I know this is exactly what I want to be doing.
Yeah. And then talking about all these like sort of subcultures that you end up a part of. And like, so this is like you personally, do you ever like stop and think like how do you as like the brand of Gretchen Rubin, like you seem to like be able to straddle so many fences and be like part of so many different communities, which is amazing. Like lots of people that write, especially in habits and stuff, sometimes get really pigeonholed to like business or to productivity or and then the other ones, like, I mean, World Domination Summit and stuff, like cooler type places wouldn't have those people ever. But everyone welcomes you with open arms. It's awesome.
Oh, well, you're so nice to say. I never really thought about that. But yeah, I mean, maybe it's the way I go about it. Certainly with habits, by looking at the strategies instead of the habits themselves, then it's like it doesn't matter if you're trying to quit sugar or write your novel or start your business or exercise more or stop using your phone. Like the same strategies work no matter what. And so then I guess I can be part of all those communities. And I'm super interested in what all those communities have to say because they all have sort of their own wisdom from the experience of people who are trying to quit sugar or the experiences of people who are trying to write a novel or the experiences of people who are trying to stop using their cell phone. You know, they all have kind of something that to add. So yeah, I really do enjoy that. I never really thought about that, but that's a really good point.
You absolutely do. It's really, I thought for sure you would spend like every time you got on a plane to go somewhere else, you'd be like, how am I going here now? This is amazing.
Okay. No, it is really great that way. It is really fun.
Yeah. Okay. So everybody now talks about the whole 80-20 rule, right? Do 20%, get 80% of the results. Do what you're good at and delegate the rest. Could you, Gretchen, tell me something within your business that you are absolutely not good at?
Oh, I am not good at analytics. And, you know, I have a podcast, I have a blog, I have a Facebook page, I have Twitter, I have my books. And, you know, and the thing about analytics is that they're just these incredibly powerful engines of information. And I'm sure that somebody could sit down and really help me understand my audience, understand how to reach them better, understand what I'm doing that's working well, things that aren't working well, help me up my game. And I'm kind of fascinated by it, but I don't have consistent, I don't keep my eyes on the ball enough, and I don't have enough analytic skills to be able to look at the data and understand what it means, which is, you know, you can give somebody all the information in the world, but if they can't make sense of it, it's just a stream of numbers. And so that's something where I'm thinking, you know, I wish I could get under the hood more or hire somebody I should try to get who's going to poke around in my analytics and tell me if there's any useful information to be revealed there.
The useful information is that you have gotten to where you've gotten without anybody looking at your
Yeah, I mean, that's comforting. That's comforting. Yeah, yeah.
Because I like somebody would just get giddy if you would just let them do that. Somebody who's into numbers, because usually they get to work on a blog that gets 1,000 people or 10,000 people a month kind of thing, not millions of people. And they would probably freak out under your hood.
Yeah, I should do that. That's on for the to-do list.
Exactly. Excellent. Okay, so let's move on to projects. This is something that you have many of. Projects can be very loose. So whether it's a new book you want to take on or just anything new that you decide, I'm sure you have a ton of opportunities coming through your inbox, coming across your desk at this point. But I would like to know what sort of thought process you go through to determine what is the next project that you, Gretchen, should take on in your business.
Oh, that's interesting. I guess I think partly about, you know, the investment of time and the return, because there's some things that I can do which take almost nothing. So the bar is very low. Like there doesn't have to be very much return on it to make it worth my while. And then some things I almost feel compelled to do and really, really kind of even against my will would do. So like in Better Than Before, I mentioned earlier, I have this framework where I divide people into four categories. And ever since the book came out, I've been deluged with people asking me like super nuanced, advanced questions about the four tendencies. And I was finally like, I need to just write a little book that's only about the four tendencies, because there was so much I couldn't say in Better Than Before because it was a book about habits. And it was sort of like the kind of thing where like I didn't even tell my agent I was doing it. I'm like, okay, you know, I just feel like I must write this book. There's so much to say and there's so much interest and I'm so obsessed and fascinated with this topic. I'm just going to start because I almost can't help it. And so I've done that. And now I'm, you know, editing it and all that and trying to figure out what to do with it. And then some things are just are much more like, I need to ponder this. But things that are exciting usually have something that make them special. Like I have a new podcast with my sister called Happier with Gretchen Rubin. And one of the things that was tremendously exciting about it was that it was a whole new medium, like using talking and sound. Because I have videos on my site and I'm a writer, obviously, first and foremost, always. But this was really intriguing to have this new podcast medium. It was like starting a blog for the first time. And the second thing that made that really exciting is I love to collaborate and I almost never get a chance to collaborate. And I've always wanted to collaborate with my sister. And for years, we've been saying things like, we should have a radio show together and like just talk about our own brilliant ideas. And like, we're so hilarious and everything. And this came up and I was like, oh my gosh. This is it. This is my chance to do something with my sister that I've always wanted to do. And it's been fantastic because I talk to my sister all the time now. I'm super close to her, but she lives in LA and I live in New York and we both work and it's hard with the time change and everything. But now we have to, so we do. And it's been this wonderful mutual project. And I've loved having a partner. She has a writing partner because she's a TV writer, but I don't really have a partner. So it's really fun to have a project where I'm working with somebody else. So that was something where I had an opportunity and there were many things about it that on the one hand made me feel anxious and insecure and like, you know, like I have no idea how this works or what the vocabulary is or the people involved or whatever. And on the other hand, it was tremendously exciting and something brand new and tons of fun.
Yeah. And I love that. And the fact that you don't know the analytics, you don't look at that sort of side of the business. What's something that you are looking for out of the podcast to know that like in 6 months or a year that is something that is worth continuing putting the time and effort into?
Well, I think it's pretty clear that it's worth. I mean, we've had more than 4 million downloads in just since March, in like 8 months, and our advertising is sold out, you know, way, way in advance. And so it's working on its own terms. And it's tons of fun. I mean, you know, so I feel like there's no question but that we should continue for both personal reasons and professional reasons.
Yeah. Okay. So that's a clear winner.
Yeah, it's clear. Yeah. Which is nice because a lot of times it's sort of like, I don't know. Like, is this paying off? You know, especially as a writer, a lot of writers feel like, well, like with when blogging first came in, I was one of the writers that I knew. I was one of the first ones to blog. And a lot of writers sort of had a feeling that that was wrong. Because to be a writer meant that you got paid for writing. And that's what it meant to be a professional writer. And so that it was somehow wrong to be writing for free. And then that was kind of debasing the value of writing and professional writing and stuff. And I think now people don't have that feeling as strongly because they understand like all the advantages and benefits to a writer that can come from something like blogging or posting on Facebook or things like that. But I think for some people, you know, you really have to say like, well, maybe I enjoy doing this, but is it a good use of my time? And given that I have to make a living or given that I need to make progress on certain things, I have to make progress. Can I afford to spend time on this other side project? So it's nice when it's very clear that you have the green light to continue.
Yeah, exactly. I agree that it is. And blogging, I think the idea has changed. I mean, now even podcasting, people don't consider it a waste of time. And most people start out doing it for free.
Yeah, no, and I think people are increasingly understanding. I think there's been a lot more sophistication and understanding that you can get value for something even if you're not getting money from it right now. You know, that something that you're doing now for a year for free could pay off in other ways that you can't foresee or that are unrelated but actually related, or, you know, that sometimes you sort of have to invest in these things in order for them to get enough momentum that they're useful. But then at some point you have to say, no, I'm not going to do that anymore. And I've certainly have had things like that too, where I'm like, I'm not going to do that anymore. So yeah, I think it's a constant evaluation.
Yeah.
And this is why we should all look at our analytics like me. Come on, don't be like me. Look at your
analytics. Well, when you have analytics like you do for podcast downloads, those are hard to not look at.
No, I look at that analytic. That's just like a big number that you don't have to analyze. I'm like,
you
okay.
Log in and it's just,
I get that number. Yeah, that number I get. But you know, like when you get into the nuances of stuff, it's
exactly
like, exactly how many Twitter referrals are you getting, and like what's the click-through rate on your newsletter if you do, you know, a 3 p.m you know, blah blah blah, A/B right. testing, all that stuff.
Exactly. So really you are, like you said, with the podcast, the indirect sort of, if you want to call them, say, monetization sort of points, they're more indirect, but you know that they're there and that's why you keep doing it. But when it's those direct ones, like who's clicking on my email or who's clicking on that ad, it's that kind of stuff. I think you need an expert and you got to really be able to sit there and just stare at numbers for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. This has been a lot of fun, Gretchen.
Yes.
I want to wrap up on something I'm calling the entrepreneurial gap. So as entrepreneurs, as dreamers, if you want to call us that, we're always sort of projecting our successes into the future, right? 1 month, 3 months, 6 months, a year, 3 years, 5 years. Whenever that next book comes out and hits that bestseller list, I'll be successful. Whenever I get to speak on that stage, I'll be successful. But right before we get there, we obviously set loftier ones into the future, which we are never at. So we're in this gap where we're never quite at our success that we want to be. That's always in the future. So I would love right now, Gretchen, if you would stop. You've done so much. I mean, from Yale Law School through to being a multiple best-selling author, I think 2 million copies worldwide. I would love for you to just stop, turn around, and tell me, by looking back at the highs, the lows, the wins, the losses, till today, how you feel about your journey so far.
Well, I feel incredibly fortunate. I mean, I feel very lucky because I do exactly my favorite thing, which is to write and to read all day long. So I feel very, very fortunate.
That's awesome. Yeah. I absolutely love it. Well, thank you so much again for joining me.
Thank you.
We've got to talk about like your writing and your books in passing. Could you specifically tell the listener where to go find out more?
Oh, yeah. All my books are for sale wherever you buy your books. And there's a lot of information on my site, GretchenRubin.com. There's, you know, excerpts and book discussion guides and all kinds of resources. If you are trying to make yourself happier, figure out your habits better. And one thing I would just say for entrepreneurs, one pattern that I often see with entrepreneurs is people who want to do something entrepreneurial and yet they're not able to move forward. They're like, this is my dream. My dream is to start my own textile design business. And hey, I took a year off from work to do it. And yet it's not happening. Why is that? And so I would just say, if you're experiencing that kind of frustration, there's a lot in Better Than Before that is specifically meant to help people who are in that situation, you know, which is very much like the person who can't write their PhD thesis. You know, it takes different forms depending on what you're trying to do, but it's certainly something that many people experience. So if that happens to be you, do not worry. There are many things to do that are not hard that will help you move forward with your goals.
Excellent. And yes, listen to Gretchen. She knows what she's talking about. We know you're listening and we know that it's all of us. We all still struggle with these things. All of us at different levels, obviously, but we all do.
Yep.
So GretchenRubin.com is the place. Happier is the podcast.
Yeah. Happier with Gretchen Rubin. Yep.
Better Than Before is the new book, and Happiness Project is a book before that.
Yes.
I will link to all of that in the show notes, so they're super easy for you to find. If you are driving now, go to hacktheentrepreneur.com and you'll track down Gretchen there. So Gretchen, once again, thank you so much for taking the time to stop by today. And
excellent.
Please just keep doing what you're doing because it is really awesome and inspiring to watch.
Well, thank you. It was so much fun to talk to you.
Thanks. Gretchen, thank you so much for joining me in that conversation. I hope you're out there listening and you enjoyed that conversation as much as I enjoyed being part of it. I learned a lot, and it's a great story. The whole Yale Law School to starting to be a lawyer to I want to be a writer, and then just getting a book and doing it. Literally getting a book with a cheesy title, following the book just in the steps, and it worked. She got a book deal, and now she's a multiple best-selling author, an entrepreneur, and just does some really, really interesting and cool stuff. So that conversation went to a lot of different places, and I had to go back. I had 4 spots that I needed to go back and listen to just to rehear them and see if there was one that just stood out to me. And then as I went back, there was definitely one thing that just it was right there. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
I think you just have to accept that that's part of it. Gertrude Stein has some wonderful quotation where she says something like, the thing about being a genius is you have to spend so much time doing absolutely nothing. And so I think sometimes, and Virginia Woolf said something like, to do nothing is my most creative way. And so I think that thinking that a day is a failure if something doesn't get done, I mean, I feel like the attempt to get something done is what the success is. And sometimes not that much gets done, but I'm still at my desk. I'm still sitting in front, you know, addressing my work. And I think that counts.
And that's the hack. Gretchen. Yes. This is awesome. And this makes me feel so good. So this goes back to the part of the conversation where you realized when writing Better Than Before that you are not like everybody else. Yet, and that's such a great realization, to realize that the way you see the world is not the same way that everybody else does. But at the same time, I love hearing someone who I look up to, who I admire, and I see as doing really big, cool things successfully, like you, Gretchen, and then hearing that you have days where you just don't get things done. And the idea of how the attempt to get the work done is the success, and addressing your work, even if nothing gets done and you just sort of stare at it all day, that's not a failure. That's not telling you or telling me or telling you out there, if this happens to you, that you are not cut out to do big things, not cut out to work for yourself, not cut out to become this entrepreneur. You don't have to have these special skill sets. You can have these natural human, I guess, are they weaknesses? I don't think they are. They're just part of being a human, where you're not on all the time. Sometimes you have to work through that and just make yourself do the work anyways. But it's, I don't know, I really love how Gretchen says this, and it made me feel so good. I guess because, I mean, I'm in the just finishing up writing my first book, and I've been struggling with it a lot. Not so much struggling with the writing and the fact that I have days where I sit there for like 3 hours and like write stuff, delete it. And I know that's not how you're supposed to do it, but I mean, I can launch products all day. I can launch podcasts. I can write blog posts, put them out there on any number of sites and get tens of thousands of people to see it. Doesn't bother me. But writing a book for the first time is really, really, really hard. So this made me feel good knowing that if this happens to Gretchen Rubin and it also happens to me, then I can probably still do it. So thank you for that, Gretchen. That was very, very cool. All right. This has been a blast. As always, I thank you so very, very, very much. HackTheEntrepreneur.com is the website. Get onto the email list and you will hear about the book. Yeah, I think it's going to be very cool. It's coming out in about a month's time. A little bit less by the time you hear this, I think. But yeah, I think it'll be good. So HackTheEntrepreneur.com, get on the email list and you'll dig it. Trust me, it's going to be good. So as always, thank you so very much. I truly do appreciate you taking the time to spend with me and Gretchen here today. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.